Welcome to Sanity Lounge. In this episode, we dive into the dark and dynamic world of Winter Sect, the Baltimore-based band known for their unique fusion of heavy and electronic sounds. Join us as we explore their creative process, the inspirations behind their intense music, and what drives their energetic live performances. We'll discuss how Winter Sect channels raw emotion into their sound and get a glimpse into the stories that shape their music. Whether you're a longtime fan or discovering them for the first time, this episode offers a front row seat to the mind behind the music. Stick around after the show for Winter Sect live at the lounge.
Welcome, Baltimore. We have a another band in this week. We have Winter Sect, who I discovered at Chris Schaefer's variety show back in August. We have Anthony, Daryl, Claudia. Welcome, guys. You guys just, as Brian Winter would say, melted our faces.
Winter Sect, baby. I mean, yeah, coming in hot. Now, so my real quick immediate question is, what would you describe your sound as? Like, if I was trying to sell it to somebody, what would you describe it as?
We're kind of post-punk.
No, we're gonna disagree right now.
Okay.
just so everybody knows, they're married.
Right.
They're married. Yeah, we've been in bands for many, many years and together. But
well, Miss Claudia, what do you think the vibe is? So he gave his, you know, vibe. What is your vibe of the band?
I want to say we're more goth, We lean more towards goth, but because we are who we are, we're not doing cookie cutter goth music.
Right.
You know, we're just very original.
Oh, yeah.
So the influences on us, I think, really come through.
So who are some of those influences?
Do you want to say something, honey?
Well, I mean, we got... get compared to Susie and the Banshees sometimes.
That's one.
We sound nothing like them whatsoever.
Right. I like Concrete Blonde.
We got that. Somebody
said that
while back.
PJ Harvey.
Oh, really? Wow. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard that. But I don't know who we even compare to. I think that a huge influence on us is bands like Love and Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, we're not just in one particular, we don't make every song sound the same, although
right.
We do work a lot with an atmosphere. We do work a lot with trying to create a sound. And for me, a lot of these songs come literally from my dreams. So it comes to me and then we put it together and that kind
of thing. The reason why that was my first question is because I'm listening, I'm watching you guys, and I love it. It's very ethereal or something, and I don't quite know. Like it feels
haunting.
It's
in
original,
a good way, though.
It's original, so don't take this the wrong way. Like one song sounds a smidge haunting, like a Doors vibe, but it's, you know, you're doing your own thing. Then another song, you got a little bit of a reggae flair with these haunting melodies in the back. Like, you know, I love whatever it is. I dig it, and that's why I was asking, because it's hard to describe. Really, it's not Susie and the Banshees. It is your own thing.
Yeah.
Now, Daryl, is your vibe the same as these cats, or what was your influences?
Oh, my influences. I had many influences. I would say, like, everything from the Sex Pistols to Sun Ra. I mean, I think we sound a little like the Cult as well.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Sort of the rocking aspect of it. I mean, I have a lot of different influences. I used to be like, you know, a big prog rock head, then I was into metal and goth and, you know, all different kinds of music.
I got you. So you've been all around.
Yeah, played in a lot of different sorts of bands. So.
Taste-wise, right? Yeah. That's good stuff.
So how long have you guys all been playing? I know Winter Sect, is that a new band? And then there's Sister X.
Which is, all three of us were in Sister X.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just kind of a different band, and we're kind of really not doing that much
right now.
We kind of broke off because we were trying to do something different.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, you don't play the bass in that band,
no.
You have a bass player, and you play the guitar.
Well, they don't let me play guitar anymore.
Okay.
They even though I've written almost all the songs,
right?
They
right.
don't let me play guitar.
Well, she's such a wonderful front person. Yep. She doesn't need to be holding a guitar. I mean, she can move around stage a lot more.
Oh yeah,
I'm very active free. On stage. Yeah.
Yeah, I like you with the bass.
Yeah. And you look like you're at home. Like, you know, like we were saying, you guys definitely looked like you were feeling the vibe, mm-hmm. and it, you know, it's good stuff.
Yeah, we have synergy together.
You can tell.
Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, it's a good feeling when we, you know, pull right. things off.
Now, so the name, so sect implies many different religions in one place, or no? Do we do, are we going that heavy, or is it just a title?
It's just a title. We pulled it, we had a whole list of things, and I can't even remember where I got it. I might have used like an internet band generator name.
Oh, okay.
You can put something in and it'll right. spit out just a ton yeah. of names, and I can't remember. I think we had a name, Winter Magnet is one I pulled up.
Winter Magnet, I don't know.
And
don't know
yeah, nobody was, and Winter Sect came out of that, and I don't know if it was from that same list or if, I don't even remember.
Right. Well, Sect sounds goth. Like, yeah. it feels right, you know, yeah. winter, you know, it's like, it feels right. I just didn't know if there was any yeah. kind of yeah. like, you know.
But it's also a single syllable, too, on mm-hmm. the end of that. So
yeah,
it's
that's
a little
true.
Easier to say.
Yeah.
That's true, too. Definitely. So, okay, so. How long has Winter Sect been official, kind of?
For about a year now.
Yeah, it's been a year.
I think
yeah.
our first gig as Winter Sect right after our wedding in December?
No, we played that crappy gig at whatever what? Hell's Bottom. No, I don't mean it was crappy. It wasn't.
It was our first gig.
It was like
but
we
that
played,
was not as Winter Sect.
No. And then didn't we do like some acoustic thing on something with... I don't know, but we used to be Mehitabel. It used to be called Mehitabel because we started playing and I wanted to play bass, and that was quite a few years and we were doing, and then.
But Daryl wasn't involved
Daryl wasn't
that.
In yeah. it, and then we always had like these different drummers. And,
what happened is we decided to put this band together, and it was going to be Winter Sect, but a friend of ours wanted Mehitabel to play, so
we played as Mehitabel,
but it really was kind of Winter Sect. Okay. But the first official one was in December,
right?
A week after the wedding, we played at the Pie Shop in D.C.
November. We got married in October.
Easy, Anthony. Easy, Anthony.
We got married October 20th.
Well, actually, then it would have been November. Okay. Yeah. Then we did another show in December. That's it. We did that. At the Atlas.
Yes, the Atlas. Mm-hmm.
The Atlas. Yeah. Okay.
For a benefit there. That's how I got those two. Okay.
And you did that as...
Winter Sect.
Winter Sect.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. As I said, the first official Winter Sect was at the Pie Shop.
Yeah.
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 Nice.
Yeah.
And that was for a kind of memorial concert for Brooke DeLarco, who was a friend of ours who had been a sound engineer
right.
actually back in the days in New York in at the Mud Club and places like that.
Oh, right.
She was Patti Smith's sound engineer.
Oh, nice.
And she engineered a lot of records. I think she only produced one record by the Feelies,
ooh.
One of theirs. But she liked our band, Sister X.
Yeah.
And
she did.
She really wanted to produce us and manage us.
She did a really good video of us many, many years ago where I was actually doing Dancing Barefoot as Sister X.
Mm-hmm.
And she put it out. It's really, really pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's good stuff.
So anyway,
yeah,
that was cool. her. Yeah. That was her memorial, and
yeah.
we played that.
She died. Yeah.
So. Was it anything like old age, or was it, you know?
I think she had cancer.
Is that right?
Yeah. She had like some rare form of cancer or something,
right.
you know. I mean, people, you know, you don't want to be here anymore, you'd go. I
yeah,
mean, people
right.
are dropping like flies. I mean, yeah. it seems like, you know, like.
Yeah, you got to stay. It's like right now, I feel like it sounds woo-woo, but if you can keep a positive vibe, it really
absolutely.
Will help your health.
No, 100%.
Especially nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty heavy out there. But you guys are doing good stuff. I
yeah.
mean, you know,
well,
the music is nice. Phenomenal.
Well,
I love
thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love it. So you kind of implied, how long have you been playing the bass?
Oh, God. I probably maybe 15 years or something. But, you know, like I said, in Sister X, they didn't let me play anything. Right. So I just was like, so I went to Mark Noon's place in Tacoma Park, and Mark Noon was like, just play the one. Just
Mark
play
Noon
on the
from
one.
The Slicky Boys.
From the Slicky Boys, yeah, right? Yeah, he'd be like, just play on the one. Just play on the one. And so so it's really simple stuff I do. I don't, you know.
Yeah, but it,
and it's thunderous, though.
Yeah, I'm saying like, it works. Yeah. And there, it's unique. You're, you know, it, you guys have a real unique
sound.
She
plays big notes.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. It drives. It does. It drives the, you and her kind of drive the run, and you pepper it with nice, you know, guitar shit, which is awesome.
Guitar shit. That's
yeah. I mean that with love.
Well,
dude.
No,
you know,
actually,
that.
That's,
I mean,
that's,
yeah,
actually, yeah. That's how I describe it.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's like, it's whatever it is, it's awesome. No, it's ethereal all,
it
is. Shit.
I
it's
love it.
Stuff.
And you guys are from a little south of Baltimore. You're from Silver Spring?
So. Yeah, we are, but I'm actually like from Baltimore. Well, I'm from Los Angeles, but when I moved here 20 years ago, and I'm from Baltimore.
Good for you.
And
nice.
I only went down there because he was down there.
Yes, nice. I kind of lured her away. She had an apartment in Butcher's Hill, which was actually kind of a fun little area.
Right. Yeah, me and my wife met down there. I had an apartment in near Patterson Park.
I was right there. Yeah,
about two blocks from Patterson.
Yeah,
Park.
That is Butcher's
Lombard,
Hill.
Right.
I kept thinking Federal Hill for some reason.
Yeah.
Right.
I lived right on Pratt Street, I had a basement apartment. That was what.
Did
I was
you really?
Wild. Yeah.
Oh, it's like Lovell on Butcher Street.
That's what I lived on. Pratt Street.
Nice.
And there was always like rats when I came
home. Oh, yeah,
home.
Definitely.
Yeah, that was the final straw. Like one night, you know, and I had to always, you always had to park like 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're walking, and I'm thinking, I wonder if this is cool doing this at 10 o'clock at night when it's 30 degrees and I'm walking home and I start walking faster. And all of a sudden I get to the door and this big old rat goes running across my feet.
Yeah,
and I went, Well, and I was like three stories up.
No,
you know?
I was below ground, so I lived with them.
Yeah. But I loved it. I love Baltimore.
Yeah.
And
good.
Just wish we lived there now. I really do.
Well, that's good stuff. We're part of the vibe of the show is to kind of try to shine a positive light on Baltimore. It's not a perfect city. It has problems. Nobody's doubting that. But, you know, many people live there, and they have to, and they're happy, and it is okay. You know,
I think it's a perfect city.
I love going
city.
Down there.
Yeah.
I love it.
It really does have a weird rap. Like, it has its issues, but it's not the be-all, end-all. It's got good stuff, you know, and that's what we're trying to kind of highlight. You know,
Baltimore's been portrayed in as we know, in television and movies as being a certain way. And
Yeah, people think of Baltimore. They think of The Wire.
Right. Absolutely.
And Baltimore's not that.
Right.
There's a whole lot of other things to it. So
absolutely.
And it seems to be a really good, I don't know, a lot of music coming out of Baltimore now.
Fantastic.
Which is really cool.
That is a fact.
That is a fact. Mm-hmm. And again, that was part of the impetus of the show. He gets out to see all these live bands of Baltimore. I play in a band, and I'm always playing. But between the two of us, it's like we just want to try to get the music out there, especially because I agree. I think that it's like everybody acts like their city is the new Seattle, but like I genuinely think that there is something happening here. We've been neglected too long. Like we're prime for a pop, and why not do it?
Baltimore is fantastic.
It is.
You
it
know,
really is.
There's a fantastic energy there, and I always think of John Waters, you know, he was talking about. Well, on every bus stop, it says Baltimore, the greatest city on earth.
Right.
On these tacky little bus stops.
Right. Wherever it is,
and there's probably some vomit over there.
Sure.
But you know, it is the great, and you know,
there's
a
lot of truth to that. Yeah.
I'm back there now. I teach yoga, which is another story.
Right?
Yeah, I've taught for many decades, and so when I first moved here, that was why I moved here. Because I got asked to take over the studio, and that's a whole other story. But I'm finally back teaching there, so I'm driving every week up to Baltimore, and just like it's just like I'm in love.
It's a gorgeous city.
It's just, you know, so mysterious and so Yeah. How, what's not to love? Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
You know, Gertrude Stein, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, all the cool people are from Baltimore.
Yeah, it's wild. Edgar Allan Poe, like I was telling you, like I made the dead Poe body that they lay in the casket. I think he's at the Carroll Mansion right now. I made Virginia Poe. I went down a wild rabbit hole and found out that my wife's great, great, great grandfather was this dude named George Spence, who was the caretaker at Westminster Hall and oversaw the burial of Edgar and then the reburial after the train destroyed the cemetery and then the burial of Virginia Poe when she got brought down, when her bones got brought down from New York. It's wild. Wow. So I have like intricate.
Yeah, it's like Poe found you because he did that bust right there of Edgar Allan Poe in the window.
That's one of the ones.
Where David, that's a miniature of the bust he sculpted for the Poe house.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you've got it in your blood.
But it just cruises around and it's been in the Laurel Museum sometimes. Then you just go, but it's like a funeral setting. So you walk in and you pay your respects. You sign a book. I mean, there's just a body laying in a casket, but it's Edgar Allan Poe.
It's wild.
But that's one thing I love about Baltimore is just that the macabre that surrounds all those stories.
So Miss Claudia, with respect and reverence, you came from LA and did you come from LA or did you met her here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got you. So, and you grew up in L.A.?
Yeah, if you can call it that.
Okay. I got you. So, you left L.A., came here 20 years ago, and you've been ever here since, and you met Anthony here?
Yes.
Right, nice. Good stuff.
Yeah.
And, Mr. Darrell, you have a history with playing with these two for how long?
Maybe a little over a year.
Right? Oh, okay.
They were, you know, I was aware of Sister X and I knew them from the whatever the scene and
I got you.
And whatnot.
Well, actually, you played with Sister X one time. You filled in.
But that,
before the pandemic.
Yeah,
one time,
before the pandemic.
On one show.
And then during the pandemic. Didn't we play a show during the pandemic at that place and nobody was wearing a mask and Daryl showed
up? Let's not talk about it. I'm just kidding.
This was years ago.
I know, I'm only teasing.
No, but anyway, I mean, Daryl actually came on board to play with Winter Sect, and then it turned out that Sister X needed a drummer, and so he then joined Sister X, too.
He's double duty.
The hybrid seat.
And he's in other bands besides ours.
Nice.
That's right.
So you guys primarily play down in D.C. or do you get up to Baltimore?
Oh, we do.
We've played a couple.
Played a few shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
More and more.
You know, back when we were doing Sister X, there were a year or two we never played D.C. We only played Baltimore locally.
For quite a while. Mm-hmm. And then I started this Bowie tribute show.
Oh, wow.
So that was before David Bowie died, but I started this thing called the Bowie Valentine Show, and we started that up in Baltimore, and I think the first place we did it was like at Club 1919 with the worst PA system. Don't. But I just remember that because, I don't mean that in any way negatively because it was really a pleasure. And then there was... Gallery 788
in Hamden,
and I don't think he's there anymore. He was cool.
Yeah, Eduardo. Yeah.
Eduardo, right.
But it was a bigger place, it was a bigger show.
It was a bigger show, and it started to really take off. And so we do it once a year. And
that's in D.C. now.
It's in D.C. now, and always so we get like several bands together, and everybody has to do a 20-minute set of Bowie tunes.
Oh, that's cool.
But they're all generally bands that are like us, original bands, not cover bands.
Not cover bands.
Everybody does their own take on you know, a Bowie song. And we have punk rock bands, you know, garage bands and stuff like that.
That's a fun concept.
Yeah, and you do that once a year?
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to probably,
around Valentine's. It's always called David Bowie Valentine, and it's the weekend closest to Valentine's Day. Cool. So this year it's going to be February 15th. And, nice. So it's usually we get seven bands and maybe a DJ or so. So it's like really, you know, quick turnovers and everybody's really professional. And
one drum set, everybody shares.
There's no time between sets. Everybody's very...
Yeah, the pie shop is great because they have an entire back line. They have a house
drum
kit.
They have
They have your Marshall cabinets, your SVT, Ampeg SVT, your Fender amps. They have all that, and it's pretty well maintained for the most part.
Yeah, that's good.
And it's really helpful because it's an upstairs venue too. You know,
if you've
done your time hauling stuff upstairs,
yeah, hauling drums up those stairs would not be fun.
I swear on everything. I played in Miami once, and it was up like three flights.
Oh.
And I mean, there were waiters carrying trays past me and shit. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like
he did that.
Oh, I hated it.
So
it's, I understand that.
And then you got to lug your amp up there.
Oh, yeah.
Your Beast.
But not this time, though. This guy had nice stuff.
Actually, I lugged my Beast there because I like it better than what they have.
Yeah. Wow. See,
it's
right.
Painful. Yeah.
Right.
But
you got to feel at home, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a fun deal, and
right.
Everybody really works hard on it, and
it's not easy.
As we learned, David Bowie's songs
not at all.
They're not easy whatsoever. There's so much nuance and so much variation, and you know, nothing is. He doesn't do like verse chorus, even though you think he's doing verse chorus. He doesn't do anything like that.
Right.
Yeah, it's always very artistic and very nuanced. So when you're a player and you start playing it, you're like, holy shit, this is a little bit trickier than felt or something.
Yeah.
You take it for granted.
It's nothing you're going to pick up, you know, and run through it.
Yeah, right.
And
you take
not
it for
Neil
granted
Young,
or something. It's not Neil Young.
It's not Neil Young, yeah.
And you think the songs go one way and they actually don't.
Like, yes.
I'm just speaking as a drummer. I was like, oh, and when I really listened to it, I was like, oh, I thought I knew how the song goes, but no, I actually don't.
Exactly.
It was different.
Do you guys do any Bowie?
I do Suffragette City with Gravediggers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I haven't heard that then.
Yeah, it's good. But, wait. The point was, the thing you just said was Bowie. I lost my point. I was going to comment on your last...
Oh, I just said the songs were
difficult. What I find as another drummer to a drummer is that, like I didn't love U2 growing up, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't love U2 right now, but I have way more respect for U2 now that I've had to learn a couple U2 songs and play it. It's like, I still don't love them, but... It doesn't bother me the way it used to because there's a little bit trickiness that I took for granted or whatever it is. I'm just using that as an example, but
I feel like I could go for a lot of bands.
It does. It does. Like I gain more. I might get shot for this, so don't. But I gain more respect for the Beatles. I love the Beatles, but I was more of a Stones cat, and I always kind of fought that fight for many years. Well, then as I get older, I got to learn all these Beatles songs, and I'm playing Hey Bulldog and I'm the Walrus and shit, and I'm going, these fuckers are really good songwriters. Like, you know, and it's like, even though it is simple and whatever, it's not. You know, it's a little tricky because of the sauciness and the thought put into their songwriting, and it's good stuff, you know? I mean, but I when you had said that, you know, Bowie was a little bit, you know, now you're like, hey,
definitely. And going to the Beatles too. I mean, Ringo played simply, but he played perfectly.
Tastes like,
And if you listen to his parts and the way they work within the song, I can't imagine them played any other way.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like, as I'm learning these parts, I'm going, holy shit. Oh, God damn, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Like that feels perfect, or, you know, and so you just gain respect for these artists that even if you didn't, you know, totally, you didn't get it or something. You kind of get
sense.
It a little bit more.
Well, also, he was like a left-handed drummer that was kind of forced to play right-handed by his teacher. So that's got to add some, you know, whatever.
Yeah, a
level
different
of difficulty or just creativity on his part.
A unique feel of some sort that's hard to replicate, you know, in a certain way.
Yeah, so you said you were going to, you're doing a festival down in New Orleans. What's that about?
Oh, we're going to do a festival called Dark City Fest. Mm-hmm. It's a 3-day like goth festival.
Oh,
and so we're playing on the 26th down there. We've got a set down there. Yeah.
Yep.
I was just going to say, have
you done it before?
No.
No. Never been to New Orleans. We're going to drive down there.
So
it's, uh, Hopefully, it'll still be there.
Hopefully, we'll get another story.
That's kind of like they're safe for once.
Right. When is that, you said?
The end of this 26th month. Yeah,
it's
October,
weekend before Halloween, so it's going to be a big weekend.
Yeah. Wow. So when you do something like that, they're not putting you up. You're going for it. You got the slot, and you're going to make it happen, or are they putting you up somewhere down there?
Well, they were going to put us up for one night, but we went ahead and made other arrangements because we wanted to be more comfortable.
Yeah, right. Well, I find if you have those means, a lot of times that's worth it, you know, because the beds in some of these hotels or whatever that they put us in.
Yeah.
I haven't been to New Orleans.
Shocking.
Yeah. It's shocking.
New Orleans is notoriously, known as the big sleazy.
Sure,
for good reason.
Right.
But it's going to be fun. We're gonna see lots of bands.
And yeah, that's exciting.
Meet a lot of people. And
yeah, that sounds cool.
Now, are you guys are you guys full time musicians, or do you have a day job and then you moonlight as a rock goddess, or what's the?
Like you teach yoga.
Right.
Well, I have a day job too.
Okay. You don't have to say it. I'm just
all
curious.
All of the above.
Sure.
I do all of the above.
I don't want you making just asking.
No, we're not full-time musicians.
All right, gotcha. It's hard to catch that, wind, but, man, if you catch it.
I get it. I have four.
Right.
Four endeavors.
Right. Where Davis and I are currently trying to, lose all other jobs other than playing music and this. But it's a dream,
It's a dream.
Cool. Absolutely.
So you need to get some, big dollar sponsors, right?
Yeah, we're trying.
We are trying, yeah. And we got a plan. We do have a plan.
No, I mean, the hobby behind me is the Predator. I make Predators. I make Xenomorphs from the Alien movies.
Oh, yeah.
Collectors buy them, and then this, and then I fix AV systems during the day.
Oh.
Yeah, baby.
And alarm systems.
So he's in the entertainment world all around,
I'm handing out my cards to all our clients.
I know.
Our clients are like some,
Yeah, they got money.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Got anything else you want to ask them? Do you have any other?
You're dying to move
on. Well, So, but I don't want to rush.
No, I'm good. We can get into it.
All right, so my main passion is drums, but the second passion is film. I usually ask this of all the guests. We're going to go down the line. I'll start with you, sir. Do you have a top three films and could you talk about them briefly?
Do you guys like movies?
Love.
We love movies. It's just, it's every time I think I always forget something.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I have films that I can watch over and over.
Yep.
I guess that's as close as, and you were mentioning Goodfellas. You were talking about that. That's a film. If I'm flipping around the TV and that's on, I stop on that channel no matter where it is in film and end up watching it.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
I don't walk around and quote it. The original Frankenstein, James Whale.
Wow. Okay.
With Boris Karloff. Yeah. It's just a movie I can watch. It's beautiful, especially if you see a decent version of it that's kind of restored and just the whole set and vibe. It has the whole expressionist.
Sure, and it is rooted in goth. I mean, or goth comes from that vibe, and it makes perfect sense that you feel at home.
Yeah,
there,
And then actually another one of my I can't say it's my all time favorite ones, because I'm going to forget something I like even better. But Peter Jackson, one of his early movies called Brain Dead.
Or did Dead you think
Alive.
He was
Dead,
say
Dead Alive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called Brain Dead.
There's two early. Well, Frighteners was great, but before Frighteners, there was two early Jackson gore fests. Yeah. One was Dead Alive.
Dead Alive, and it's a comedy, too. It's the bloodiest movie that I've ever seen, and it's a comedy.
Right.
On top of that, and it's just hilarious, and that's totally watchable. It's just...
My gosh. Early Peter Jackson was shocking gore and, over-the-top fun. Yeah. I mean, it's dark, but it's hilarious. But it's going to kill me. It was
The one before that, his very first one was called Bad Taste.
Bad Taste.
Yes,
that's the one. Dude, Bad Taste. Oh my God, Jeff Myers. If you didn't come up with that, my buddy Jeff Myers is yelling right now. Bad Taste. Like those two movies.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that, well, you know, when I heard that Peter Jackson was going to do Lord of the Rings, I said, somebody's on crack.
Everybody's like, what?
Somebody's on crack. Right? Whoever, you know, put this guy in charge of it. Of course, he did a wonderful job.
Yeah.
But the head orc.
Yes.
The makeup was taken off of the one villain in Bad Taste.
No shit.
Yes. If you go back and look at it, it's
which, the orc from which movie? Return of the King? The one
Return
with
the King.
The leader when they're Minas Tirith, when they're the main battle in the Return of the King. Main orc.
I'm trying to remember. I think I.
Yeah, we're gonna.
It's either that or one of the orc generals or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely, if you go back, just you could just look up on the internet.
Yeah,
I think it's even on the cover of if there's a video, and yeah, they there's little. And, you know, he always has little tributes to his older movies.
Right, odes to his earlier films.
And I don't know if you remember in Dead Alive, the whole cause of that plague was the Sumatran rat monkey.
Right, the monkey.
So in his version of King Kong, there's a scene of on the boat. There's a little, there's a crate. It says, danger, Sumatran rat monkey.
That's so fun. That's wonderful.
And there's, you know, there's always little Easter eggs on there. But yeah, Peter Jackson, you know, is brilliant.
It's so funny that you bring up the whole Lord of the Rings thing, because now knowing what we all know about Lord of the Rings, if you're listening or watching, or if you haven't, go watch Bad Taste and Dead Alive. It'll blow, like it is. So imagine then being a Lord of the Rings lover who've been waiting your whole life for this movie to be made the right way, and you hear that this guy is the guy that's doing it. Right. It just doesn't make sense. But they knew, because apparently Jackson is a Lord of the Rings, like, his whole life. Like, he you know, he really knows it, and had a real serious passion for it.
Well, he had Christopher Lee helping him out.
And he sold... You're Christopher Lee, as you love him. And he sold himself so good that they were like, well, this guy's got the... You know, he gets it. And, you know, but Bad Taste and Dead Alive.
Yeah, and I think he was able to sell it because he had built, you know, some kind of studio infrastructure in New Zealand.
Right, which, the wing nut thing or whatever.
Yeah, and he would be able to handle the effects, and of course, that was the perfect place to shoot it. Anyway.
Right, and he had the concept of doing them all three, you know.
Yeah.
It's like a, you know, they filmed it all at the same time. It took 12 years to release, edit, do all that
stuff.
Yeah,
I like The Hobbit, too.
I like The Hobbit a lot. A lot of fans have problems with The Hobbit because the book is so short. It's like an 89-page book, and the rule of thumb is a page is a minute of film, at least for screenplay. So if it's an 89-page book and they made it into a 12-hour movie, they've added a lot, you know, and so people had a problem with it. I thought it was fine.
Yeah. Well, it's more like the cartoon. I mean, the cartoon's more like the novel.
Is that right? Oh, yeah, the old, right.
I love those.
Yeah, I remember that.
The Rankin-Bass cartoons.
Yeah, right. All right, good stuff, man. All right, Daryl, you're up.
All right, now I'm on the spot. I'm trying to think. Of course, my mind goes blank, you know.
It's fine.
But I would say, like, the original Wizard of Oz, or not the original, but the one with Judy Garland and all that. And I hate musicals. I just don't like them. But that one, I don't know. That worked. I probably like it because I saw it so many times as a little kid.
Right.
And it was always a big deal. When I was a child. So.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting one. Nobody said that yet, but I don't know why, because it is a classic.
Yeah, right? It was just one of those things that, I don't know, maybe it's nostalgia or something. It's like, it reminds me of childhood, but it's just like a perfect like fantasy movie.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
It's really good.
Have you ever done The Dark Side of the Moon, Wizard of Oz?
Actually, son of a bitch, I was going to ask.
Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah, and it does. It does line up. It's so, actually really fun.
So let's hover here briefly, because this is what we do at Sanity Lounge. But so you're an old school cat, but we did it pre-internet. Long before the internet, we got the memo that, and the whole thing was, if you had a VHS tape, when the third lions roar, you start your CD or your cassette tape. Mm-hmm. And if you start it right then, it would sync up.
Yeah.
And I swear, they claim they didn't do it on purpose, but it is one of the wonders of the world that they didn't do it on purpose. I mean, because things line up just too much, you know.
I don't know if I've ever not done it on acid, though. So I think I've never sat there sober watched it.
I have. Because it's so shocking to me. I don't get it. And it's really, there's a lot of coincidences, dude. Like Great Gig in the Sky is playing during the whirlwind or the tornado.
Yeah.
You know, the voices in the background are voices that are in the background. Money, right when the color comes in, the change drops for money. Brain damage is when the scarecrow's.
That's definitely cool.
Brain damage is when the scarecrow's doing. If you only had a brain, you know, it's like what the.
No, Roger Waters 100%.
I know. I know.
Didn't do that.
It's one of the great mysteries.
But it's
that
a good one.
All right. Okay. Go ahead.
That one. Let me see. I had another one. What was it now? Doctor Strangelove.
Oh, God,
Kubrick
bless you.
Is still one of my favorite movies. It's the best, I'd say. Satire and comedy about nuclear war you'll ever see. You know,
it's the most prescient movie. If you watch it today, it's the most prescient movie you could watch today.
And I had a great cast too. I mean, everybody was really fun. Peter Sellers plays like the president of the United States, and Doctor Strangelove
three or four different guys.
Yeah. That's a great movie.
And George C. Scott coming in hot.
General Bud Turgeson.
Oh, my God. Sterling Hayden.
Yeah.
Dude, what a great movie. And a young James Earl Jones. If you catch it, the very beginning, very young James Earl Jones is the pilot.
Yeah.
At the beginning, I think it was his first role.
Yeah. That's funny.
Good stuff, man. Good pool. Dr.
You have one more.
I have one more,
and I'm thinking, like, okay, I'll just say Female Trouble by
Our
by
boy.
John Waters. Okay, is just, there we go. It's one of the funniest damn movies I've ever seen. Yeah. Divine is hilarious.
Oh, my God.
And it's eminently quotable. Mm-hmm. And it's just, the first time I saw it, I was like, what is this? What am I watching? This is hilarious. Right? So. It's off the wall. It's still a great movie. It still holds up.
Incredible.
Nice. Yeah.
Well, we want one of our white whales of guests that we want to get is John Waters.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
He's a Baltimore icon and everything.
I have a letter written.
That would be great.
You say, there's only one way to reach him unless you know somebody who knows him, is you mail him a letter to Atomic Books in Mount Royal, and he goes in there and picks up his mail.
Oh really?
Yeah, he doesn't have social media, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. They're like, we can't guarantee anything other than it will be placed in his hand because he comes in to get his mail often.
Yep. So that's
a couple of photographers that have shot him and stuff like that. So I got some connections, but Glenn Workman, he said to get Mink Stole. He's like, Mink Stole would probably be more fun of a conversation.
Right. Yeah, well, that's a good pull, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's Baltimore to the core, too.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, definitely.
That's good stuff.
It's such a funny movie.
It is. Really and underrated. It gets overlooked, you know, a lot of times because of Pink Flamingos and everything that was around that time, which were all bangers and wild.
Yeah, but Desperate Female Living Trouble, is another classic.
It's shocking. It's hard to recommend because you don't know. You know, some people are like, God damn, that was incredible. And some people are like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Like,
that's usually with most of his movies.
Right. Right. The guy I lived with had a Pink Flamingos. He gave it to me, actually, I think. But it was a Pink Flamingos laser disc, and it had a scratch and sniff talking asshole. It was unbelievable.
That's
again,
amazing.
My boy Jeff Myers.
That's awesome.
Who
Do
loved
you have that
alive.
Still?
I have my laser disc collection, but... I've told that story since, that and me and my son have looked, and it's not there. So he gave me hundreds of Laserdiscs, right. And he must have kept that one for nostalgia. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. That's a keeper right there, you know. All right, Miss Claudia,
you are up.
What do you think? Can you
narrow it
down?
I'm in the same boat as Anthony. It's like,
yeah, we'll
just leave here and go, God, there's so many movies that when they come, when I see, it's like I bow down to them, you know? But I think what's like, a current movie that's just the last couple of years is the Jojo Rabbit film.
Oh, wow. It's
just so exquisitely good.
It's unbelievable.
And every part of it is great. And it's, you know, anything that can make fun of, you know,
that kind of travesty.
Right. Yeah. And the acting and everything is just
the acting was
so
unbelievable.
Epic. Mm-hmm. And the kid and the, you know, the whole thing. So that's one that I kind of
and that
put
one
on
is very fun and it's very touching. It's very like it's got a huge blend of both, and so it's got a little something for everybody.
That little kid, you know, the 10-year-old kid, and
even the girl, the little girl, she was perfect.
Fantastic. And Sam Rockwell.
Who doesn't love Sam Rockwell?
Oh my God.
Tesco Watiti, though, as Hitler.
You know?
Like, I know. Imaginary
Hitler. How about that guy? I mean, that guy is a talented dude. He wrote and directed that. Yeah. I mean, that was like one of his, or I don't think it was his first, but it was one of his first major projects.
He did that after Thor and stuff like that.
Was that after Thor?
I think it was after Love and Thunder.
See, I thought he did this and that guy.
Maybe right
either.
About it. Yeah. I know.
Pick.
I love him. He's awesome.
Wonderful pick, Miss Claudia. Next.
Well, that would be that. And then I think, you know, I am a classic. So
gal.
I really have like a lot of that in my background and stuff. And, so I would say, like, if I was going to pick a film that there's no way I wouldn't watch it, is Night of the Hunter.
That's a good one.
Directed by
Wait up, Night of the Hunter.
Charles Lawton. And he thought it was like just the worst thing he ever did.
Because it was a failure.
Oh my God! And you've got, you know, just this whole thing going on there with the black and the white and the innocence and
the love and hate,
that movie is really
wow.
That's
Robert
one of the
Mitchum
ones I just
is
that
Robert Mitchum I'm like, who's scary that? Freaking right. Villain
scary freak and wow. Shelley Winters as you know the mother and she's just so bizarre you know,
Shelley
to
Winters
watch.
is a lost treasure
and
I haven't seen that movie
Well, that movie,
I saw that movie once.
Love it. Yeah. But I only saw it once. But that's why when you said it, I'm like, oh my gosh.
I think Charles Lawton came to the U.S. like there was like a small band of actors, right, that came and they made films. And, you know, he was always an actor. So I think he was married to
Elsa Lancaster.
Elsa Lancaster.
But he was part of the whole group that came over with James Whale, the director that I talked about, the director of Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. They were all part of a theater group, I believe, in England.
Oh, and wow.
He brought a lot of them over.
So is this the 30s or 40s?
Probably late 20s to early 30s.
Oh, wow.
Probably when they came over. And Charles Lawton, he was married to Elsa Lancaster. And Night of the Hunter was the only movie he ever directed, and it was a flop when it came out.
It was a huge flop when it came out.
Yeah,
but
I think
it's
cult classic.
I was going to say, I think it's on Criterion Collection now. I think it's got a lot of respect nowadays.
Oh, yes.
We just saw it just this last year again, and it is scary. I mean,
Mitchum is evil, man.
He's evil like a preacher man.
He's the epitome of... You know,
young Mitchum.
Yeah, I mean, and he's just.
He's portraying a psychopath, and he's after these little kids. And
we're rewatching that.
Right,
Night of the Hunter, baby. This is why we do this.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It is 100% why we do it.
Yeah. I mean,
well, the original Cape Fear too.
Yeah. Oh, that was one of the greats
Max
too.
Cady.
Yeah.
You know? Yes. He was. Yeah,
that's the thing. A young Mitchum, he is a great actor, but young Mitchum was a different Robert Mitchum. And if you go back and rewatch some of his early films, like he was firing on all cylinders, you know, if he wanted to.
Many of them were firing on all cylinders. Yeah, that's true. Yes, you know, true. That was back in the day where nobody could get, you couldn't get a facelift.
Right,
you,
sure.
You know, you had to just, you had to be on your game.
Right,
you know?
It is what it is. What you are is what you are.
What you are is what you are, right. You know.
Well, but also, yeah, you would see that a lot of actors, they had unusual features. They're not...
Marty Feldman. Remember Marty Feldman?
Yeah, but I mean, nowadays there's more of like a standard look that, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
They're looking for.
They're looking for that's almost like a generic beauty, you know, or something like that. Where if you look at actors like Robert Mitchum, he's unusual looking.
Who was the other guy in the original Cape Fear? It was Mitchum and
Gregory Peck.
Yeah. Peck, yes. Right, okay.
Gregory Peck.
Right, and Don Baker, a little side role? I know he was in the remake. Original? I'm saying in the original.
Joe Don Baker?
Yeah, yeah.
No. Yeah,
No, that was way before.
Yeah,
okay. I know Peck, though. Peck's the one that I was thinking of. Because I remember the original, and Peck was, or the Max Cady guy was Mitchum, and Peck was the lawyer?
Peck was the lawyer. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
They both had cameos in the remake.
Right. Yep. That's good stuff. All right, so do you got one more? Or was that?
I'm going to just say I really like cheesy rock and roll movies. I really do.
Give it to me.
Of course, you know, everybody likes, you know, what's its face, you know.
What's its face?
Spinal Tap.
Oh,
okay. Sure.
For me, I really loved Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, me too.
I can't tell you. I mean, and you want to talk about weird looking actors and stuff, and you know,
Rami Malek,
and you know, he basically can't get arrested now. You know, he did a really crappy film after that, and it's like he played Freddie Mercury, and he looks like Freddie Mercury, but
right.
I just thought it was great. I loved it.
I thought it was good.
That movie surprised me so much. That was one of those ones that I was not, like, I love Queen and everything like that, but when I first saw the preview, I was like, you know, and I didn't see it when it came out in the theater, and it came on video, my son got it or something, and I'm like, yeah, I'll watch it, and I loved it. I thought it was phenomenal.
I was not a Queen fan or any of that. I was more like, I couldn't believe that Freddie Mercury was like, he was actually, they dubbed his voice with...
Right. I heard that Malik...
With the other
did
guy.
A lot
the,
of the Rami other
Malek,
hybrid
they did
whatever.
This hybrid right. And he got more teeth put in. Mm-hmm. He's already got this weird face.
Yeah, he's a strange...
Right. He's a strange looking guy, and my stepmother met him, right? And she basically said, like, where are you from? You know, like, because he's a twin.
Right.
Wow.
He's got a twin brother, and he goes, Van Nuys. You know, he's from the Valley.
Right.
Wow.
But in Los Angeles. But evidently their family was Egyptian, you know,
and stuff like that.
Yeah. And he had a twin, and basically he worked really hard. You know, he was not getting any roles and this and that, and he finally got, like, some small part, you know, and he was like begging for it, and somebody saw him, I thought he was great.
He was outstanding.
I just loved the whole sound of it, you know, just the sound and how they recreated the Wembley Stadium scene and his choreography, that was really cool.
Yeah, it was, and it ruined me when Rocket Man came out a year later.
Yeah, that was,
John, I didn't like it as
I didn't
much.
Either.
I didn't either.
I didn't
and
like it, it.
And it wasn't like awful. It just wasn't. It didn't give me what I needed, like Bohemian did.
Well, they made it too much, and like I said before, I don't really like musicals, and that was very much a musical.
That was a musical.
Breaks into song, and I'm just like, it takes me out of the movie.
Absolutely.
And it just does.
Right, I agree.
I wanted more of a biopic.
Right,
you know,
me too.
Like the
because Rhapsody the Queen one. was so good, and then when I saw that, but it's weird because some people now, like I feel like I'm right about that, but many people love Rocket Man and don't love Bohemian Rhapsody.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't, you know, but they're out there. Like, you know, who knew? Anthony, you were going to say something, sir?
I was just going to say Bohemian Rhapsody has been played many, many times in our house. Mm-hmm. If it comes on cable, it's one of those that she'll put it on.
It's her Goodfellas.
It's her Goodfellas. Special. Exactly.
It's special. Right.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Yeah.
I know every part of the film, one of those.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
It's your rewatchable.
That was like The Doors.
I love The Doors.
Oh, I love The Doors. I loved that. Yeah.
Me too. Manzarek
got... Oliver Stones.
Right.
Yeah. Oh,
Manzarek got pissed off about The Doors movie because he was working on it with Stone the whole time, and then when it came out, he thought Stone portrayed Morrison as an asshole only. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, he did look like an asshole in the movie, but I feel like there had to be a lot of truth to that. The man was on drugs and liquored up all the time. I mean, it's a difficult life. Like,
but people that knew him, they said that the movie missed Jim's sense of humor.
They said that
he was one of the funniest guys you'd ever meet. But that was not in the movie.
No, it was dark.
He was really a funny guy.
Yeah, it was very dark.
It was dark.
It definitely was. But that is Stone. You know, you got to know if Stone's developing your biopic or it's going to be...
He's going to take it in his own direction.
Sure. Yeah,
we're not going to be too
whatever
funny.
He'll lean into the weird, you know, which is fine.
Right.
You know? Again, we love the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, so do you guys have anything you want to plug? Or this will come out November
10th.
Yeah. So if you think about the future, is there anything or any websites or anything you want to direct people to on social media?
Well, we have Wintersect is on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I guess we are on Facebook, too.
Yep.
We don't have an official website yet. We're starting to gear up.
Cool.
We've been kind of lame in that regard.
We're on Bandcamp too, aren't we?
Bandcamp.
Bandcamp.
We have two recordings out on Bandcamp right now.
We're still trying to get
and we're gonna work on getting some more recordings together and a little bit of distribution help with that too.
We got somebody in line for that.
We're gonna try and help with stuff like that too.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Well, I mean, we'll have anywhere to find you guys on our website. And like I was telling you about our calendar, we'll start putting the gigs you got coming up on our calendar so people can find you.
Yep.
Well, we got New Orleans, and then we've got something in December. I forget what it is.
We're going to be playing in York, Pennsylvania, I think.
In Pennsylvania, we're going to be gearing up for that Bowie. We have the Bowie thing.
All right,
in
November.
I'm going to be
following that closely. Is that in
Washington, D.C.?
It will be at the Pie Shop in D.C.
Okay.
We
go down to 9:30 Club every go down there.
Well, you know, the thing is that we have talked about doing it
elsewhere. Yes.
Well, doing one up in Baltimore and one in D.C.
Again, doing it both.
Because, I mean, we had traditionally, even in D.C., we've had Baltimore bands,
It's bands like shy away. They're like, we liked it, but we have to come up with something different this year.
It takes a lot of work for a 20-minute set.
You got to love Bowie.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people you get, usually, did you say it sells out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's only 100, it's a smaller club.
It's a smaller club.
100 people is 100 people. That's cool. I mean, we can look for some venues up in Baltimore. That sounds like an awesome project.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, I
always thought that since, you know, everybody has to work so hard to get it together, wouldn't it be nice to do it another night of it, you know?
Right.
But obviously, like in Baltimore or someplace.
Right.
All that hard work doesn't go to waste, and you can, you know.
Right. It's funny. Me and Amanda went to an Oreo game not long ago, and we went to Pool's Island Brewery, which is basically in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Taylor Swift, but it was still random people. I mean, not random people, random musicians coming up and doing a Taylor Swift song or two, and then they would sit down, and then somebody else would come up and
do a Taylor. But it was still cool.
Because you're still the way we look at the cover band, you're still playing the music, so you still got to learn the music. What you're saying with Bowie being so complex.
Right.
It's cool. But it's, I mean, that was a cool thing to walk into.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man.
Well, I love Taylor Swift, but I've never heard anything I've never heard one of her songs. I just think that she's a stand-up human being.
My wife and Garrett, I've seen the Eras Tour a few times.
Oh, you've seen? Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's an impressive
You've seen the Eras Tour?
Like on Netflix. The video. You can watch it.
Oh, really?
It's like 3.5 hours long, and it's impressive, the thing she does. And,
here's the
and
thing.
She's a showman now.
Sure. Anybody that has that kind of success and that kind of money and the amount of material. I mean, that's the thing. And she writes it, so can say whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, I mean, she
made
a whole tour on the eras of her albums. Right. I mean, that's why it's called the Eras Tour.
And you can say whatever you want about her, but at the end of the day, most of the negative stuff you're saying about her is because you didn't do it.
Yeah, I don't
you know, because
I
it's
like... I like her. I don't like all of it, but I like a lot
neither.
Of it.
I don't even... I just am saying I do respect her, like you. It's like, gotta... I mean, give me a break. Like, something's right.
Well,
I mean,
she's... watch the Eras Tour. It's
okay,
it's an
I didn't
impressive
know you could
con-
watch...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I have, to this day, I've never heard any song. Right. I don't know anything
that's
she
so
does.
I think you'd probably like it.
She's
mean,
like, I like Taylor.
She's got all kinds of stuff.
No, I saw... You know, I see what she's doing.
You like her more.
And I see how she's using her celebrity to really be helpful in the world, which I think is, you know, great use of visibility and power. Yeah.
Sure,
sure. I will say, though, I'm not crazy about her wardrobe, you know.
That's funny.
She wears some cool stuff in the
That's
ass.
Funny.
She wears
yeah.
some cool stuff, but oh my God.
No, it's cool, though.
Goth her up a little bit.
Yeah,
here.
She needs a little, like, I just can't deal with the whole leotard thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So the concert footage is it's one concert. It's at SoFi Stadium in L.A. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, people, the crowd, when you got it, came in, you got these lighted wristbands that were automated. So
she got that from good. Fish, just to be clear.
Yeah, but it's wild. And then just the cool stuff, like the overhead shots that people down on the floor probably can't even see, where she's kind of dancing around as she does songs, and she slams her foot down, and the whole stage just cracks.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
It's stuff, watching it's awesome, because it's stuff that people down there didn't even see. And then just the screen, it's just the spectacle, the stage performance, the band.
Yeah, no, her band's sick. It's got to be sick.
Her band is great.
You know,
the
like,
dancers are great.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just, it's impressive.
Balls to the walls.
Right.
She doesn't call it in.
Sure, it's a show.
And
it's
again, I've never seen or heard anything she's ever done. You just know.
That's a wild thing to
you
say.
Just know. Right. You just know that this woman is, you know, she's really a gift to the world. And she's doing good
through
her.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. One of Amanda's good friends posted a picture. She saw her... It was from 2007. She saw her for $10, and they met her. She there's a picture with her. She
that's
saw her
awesome.
Just. It was $10. It was just in some.
That's rare.
It was
rare.
Just in a venue.
Yeah.
She's like wearing her headset, her old school headset, where it's just like the ball.
She's like at the point where she was like Tiffany in the 80s.
Yeah.
Remember, she was touring the malls.
Yeah, that's right. In the 80s. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good
she's
stuff.
She's done a lot to raise self-esteem for younger girls.
Yes, 100%.
Of all color, all walks of life. She's such a supportive. And again, I've never heard anything. I probably won't ever.
If you want to just hear her music, and what actually really impressed me was seeing her on the Tiny Desk Concert. It was her and a guitar and a piano.
Yep.
And I was like, wow, she actually can play and she can sing. Yeah. She's not like auto-tuned to high heaven or whatever. I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Right.
And I got a lot of respect for her because of that. You know,
absolutely.
It was just, she's actually very talented.
Yeah.
Well, you don't get 100%. To where you are being, you know, not having talent.
That's what I'm saying. It's like all the hate is so, it's so strange. Like, why? Just put some of that energy towards good
vibes.
Yeah,
like that. There was a video some dude bought. He wanted to sign that Taylor Swift
and
guitar,
he
and he just walked up and smashed it.
Oh, like, yeah.
But it turns out it wasn't really signed by her.
Is that right?
No. He spent a couple of $1,000 on it.
That's funny. It was a fake.
That's a happy ending.
Okay. So that is a happy ending.
It is. It's just this kind of, you know, nowadays people want to go viral. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, this guy buys a guitar, is like, oh, I'm going to smash this. Everybody knows where I stand.
Right.
And it's like, it's just.
It's a little embarrassing.
Once again,
you could have taken that money and fed, you know, a poor family.
That's my guy, sure.
A bunch of poor families.
Put it to good.
Yes.
Real
and,
good.
And you could use that energy to go out and inspire other people to do good things.
That's wonderful. We love it.
Or you could buy a McLaren and crash it.
Yeah,
and put it on social media. Yeah,
that,
there's some kid that did that.
Real productive, like, right? That's real productive stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, we're trying to we're trying together to bring positivity Sanity. Back to the world, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate you guys, and I'm so happy to meet you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Wait till you hear and see it; it'll be great. And stay sane, Baltimore.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
All right, we're
Thank
out.
You.
Great having you guys.
Thank you so
Thanks.
Much.
Thank you so much.
Too. that slick black hair, wild eye. You don't care, you compromise. You want me in your dream.
Oh,
Thanks for listening, Baltimore. You can find us at www.sanitylounge.com or on Instagram at sanity.lounge.
Keep listening and subscribe.
Stay sane, Baltimore.